What happens when a country treats politics like reality TV? When the lines between entertainment and governance blur so completely that a game show host can become president? Trump's rise wasn't an accident or aberration. It was the inevitable result of decades spent worshiping at the altar of branding, where image matters more than substance, and performance trumps policy. His path to power began not in political offices, but in boardrooms and television studios, where he perfected the art of selling nothing but his own name. Understanding Trump requires understanding how capitalism itself transformed. In the 1980s, companies like Nike discovered something revolutionary. Why bother making products when you could just sell ideas? These hollow brands projected powerful identities while outsourcing actual manufacturing to sweatshops paying pennies per hour. Trump followed this playbook perfectly. After his casinos failed spectacularly, he reinvented himself not as a builder, but as a brand. The Apprentice became his infomercial. He got paid to showcase his gilded lifestyle on network television while other brands paid for product placement. Eventually, he stopped constructing buildings entirely, simply licensing his name to developers worldwide who carried all the risk while he collected fees regardless of whether projects succeeded or collapsed. This hollow brand approach, all image, no substance, positioned him perfectly for a political culture that had learned to mistake performance for leadership. Trump imported reality TV and wrestling tactics into Washington. The Apprentice wasn't entertainment. It was a 13-season showcase of cutthroat capitalism, where winners enjoyed mansions while losers lived in tents without electricity. His brutal honesty about inequality paradoxically became his appeal. Unlike traditional capitalist messaging promising universal prosperity, his show reflected actual wealth concentration. The top 10% own 89% of assets. His implicit message, the system is rigged, but ruthlessness could make you a winner. Combined with wrestling's theatrical feuds and suspension of disbelief, this created campaign rallies where facts became optional and conflict became entertainment. The consequences transcended theater. In March 2017, U.S. airstrikes killed over 1,500 Iraqi and Syrian civilians, more than any month under Obama. When Trump bombed Syria, media figures called the images beautiful, treating military violence as spectacle. His administration's alternative facts weren't incompetence. They were power demonstrations. Being tethered to reality is for losers. The week Trump won, two catastrophes struck: his election and the devastating bleaching of the Great Barrier Reef. With just 1 degree Celsius of warming, over 90% of the reef was impacted, nearly a quarter already dead, a silent theft from future generations. Unlike other political mistakes, climate damage accumulates irreversibly. Trump's administration became a fossil fuel wish list, approving Dakota Access and Keystone XL pipelines, expanding Gulf drilling, killing the Clean Power Plan, gutting environmental regulations. He stacked his team with oil executives: Rex Tillerson from ExxonMobil as Secretary of State, Scott Pruitt as EPA head. Yet low oil prices restrain new extraction. With easy-to-access fuels depleted, expensive methods like Arctic drilling require prices above $100 per barrel. Since prices crashed in 2014 to around $55, companies pulled back. ExxonMobil's profits plummeted from $45 billion in 2012 to under $8 billion in 2016, an 80% collapse. Climate denial isn't just about protecting fossil fuel wealth. It's about defending an entire worldview. Addressing climate change requires everything neoliberalism opposes: collective action, public investment, corporate regulation, higher taxes on the wealthy. The crisis reveals that markets alone cannot solve existential threats, fundamentally threatening the ideological foundation that has dominated politics for 40 years. Trump channeled economic panic through white resentment over changing demographics. The rage toward Obama transcended policy. It was, as Van Jones termed it, a white lash. Hatred of Hillary Clinton sprang from something primal, fury at a woman seeking power without packaging herself in cuteness or coyness. Voting for someone openly stirring racial and gender hatred means deciding those issues matter less than your concerns, a disturbing indifference to the danger faced by marginalized groups. Trump layered white male status anxiety atop genuine economic insecurity from three decades of eroding job security and safety nets. For white working class voters who once accessed well-paid union manufacturing jobs, these losses feel particularly shocking, contributing to rising deaths of despair, suicide, drug overdoses, alcohol-related illnesses among middle-aged whites without college degrees. After Clinton's defeat, many liberals urged Democrats to abandon identity politics for economics. This misdiagnoses the problem. Clinton's failure stemmed from her neoliberal track record that left working-class voters without credible economic offers. Her identity politics merely sought to make an unequal system more inclusive without challenging fundamental inequalities, trickle-down identity politics. Nothing has built our corporate dystopia more effectively than systematically pitting working-class whites against blacks, citizens against migrants, and men against women. For 40 years, a pattern has emerged. Wait for a crisis, declare extraordinary politics, suspend democratic norms, and ram through the corporate wish list while people remain disoriented. Any tumultuous situation, military coups, market crashes, natural disasters, serves this function if framed with sufficient hysteria. Hurricane Katrina provides the blueprint. When levees failed after decades of infrastructure neglect in poor black neighborhoods, FEMA took 5 days to deliver basic supplies to the Superdome. The abandonment played out along race and class lines. Those with means escaped. Others were stranded, then criminalized as looters. With residents dispersed and unable to defend their interests, Republicans implemented a radical agenda, demolishing public housing for condos, privatizing schools, suspending labor standards, pushing for oil drilling despite climate change links to hurricanes. The very solutions guaranteed more Katrinas. Trump assembled an all-star team of crisis opportunists who've repeatedly profited from disaster. 5 Goldman Sachs executives hold senior roles, including Treasury Secretary Steve Mnuchin, the foreclosure king, who made $1.2 billion foreclosing on tens of thousands of homes after the 2008 crash. These appointments signal readiness to exploit any future crisis. Saying no to shock tactics isn't enough. After 2008, despite massive resistance, occupations, general strikes, cries of "we will not pay for your crisis," austerity marched on. Obama squandered opportunities to restructure failing sectors while addressing climate and inequality. The problem? Atrophied utopian imagination. People recognized the obscenity of bank bailouts but couldn't envision alternatives. Occupy Wall Street was clear on its no, but lacked a compelling yes. Many are ready for a captivating yes. Redistribution, reparation, challenging our equation of good life with isolated consumerism. Progressive transformation is proving popular. Free college, doubled minimum wage, renewable energy, demilitarized police. Standing Rock showed what protection looks like. Water protectors weren't fighting against something, they were protecting what sustains life. This wasn't patriarchal power, but reciprocal care. The water protects us, so we protect it. While elites use shock to impose nightmares, we can respond differently, coming together, making an evolutionary leap. A political formation addressing economic inequality and climate disaster as inseparable from racial and gender systems could seize populist ground from the right. The choice is ours: division and extraction, or a future built on care, protection, and genuine democracy.